You are listening to End of Life University Podcast, real talk about life and death. This is episode number 149. Welcome to End of Life University Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator. In this podcast, I share thoughtful conversations with experts in various fields related to dying and death, and informative teaching sessions on preparing for the end of life by living fully today. And I want to thank you so much for joining me today for another episode of the podcast. I'm really glad you're here with me. In a little while, I'll be sharing an interview from the archives with Judith Gantley, and we're going to be talking about the use of theater for helping people talk about death and dying. And so I think you'll find that very interesting. Before we get started with that, I have a couple of announcements. Number one is coming up July 24th, 2018, I will be hosting a webinar with Suzanne O'Brien, who is a nurse who has started the organization Doula Givers, and Suzanne trains people, community members and volunteers to provide doula, death doula, end of life doula services to neighbors, family, and friends at the very end of life. And she's going to join me and teach a webinar on end-of-life doula training for caregivers and volunteers. So it's going to be a one-hour training that Suzanne will provide. So it's a live training. She'll have a question and answer session afterwards. And this is like the level one of the training that she offers. There are two other levels. So this is really an introduction to death doula training. It's not the entirety of the training she offers, but it's the introduction to it. And I think it would be a great way to get familiar with what end of life doulas do, and also to find out if it's something you might be interested in learning more about. So this will be coming up on July 24th, 2018. You can find a link to some more information to it if you come to the show notes for this episode, eolupodcast.com, episode number 149. I'll have a link there, but for now, put it on your calendar so that you can tune in and join us for this webinar. I think it will be a really great experience. So that's my first announcement. And the next is, as you know, if you're a regular listener, this podcast is sponsored by generous donations through my page at patreon.com/EOLU. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. These contributions help defray some of the expenses of creating, producing, and broadcasting this podcast and the End of Life University interview series. And today I want to thank my brand new patron, Nancy Walker. Thanks so much, Nancy, for signing up to join the team and make a contribution. I just want to tell you, it offers me a great deal of emotional and spiritual support in addition to the financial help, just to know that there are people out there listening who appreciate what I'm offering and want to provide me with some support. So thanks again to Nancy, and thank you to all of the other patrons who've been supporting this podcast for the last year and a half. I'm very, very grateful to all of you. And if you're listening and you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron, you can go to patreon.com/EOLU. You'll learn how to sign up there for as little as a dollar a month donation, which is almost nothing, really. If you think about it, there's not much you can even buy for a dollar a month. So that's the entry point if you'd like to join the team. Once you do sign up, you'll get some benefits like a monthly Q&A session I call the Hospice Happy Hour, where you can submit questions to me and I record the questions and answers for you, so you get a little extra contact with me. Also, if you're a platinum level supporter at $5 a month or more, you get access, unlimited access to the replays of all the end of life university interviews, starting with this year, 2018. They're all posted on the Patreon page, plus some other bonuses that I put out there from time to time for patrons. So, think it over, see if you'd like to join the team and become a supporter. So with that being said, I'll get on with the interview, which is with Judith Gantley, who's an actress who does a one-woman show called Waltzing the Reaper. And Judith will tell us all about the play. And I'll be back when we're done with this conversation in order to give you some of my takeaway messages from the talk with Judith. I'm excited to welcome my guest, Judith Gantley, who is an actress who is currently performs the one-woman play, Waltzing the Reaper, and we'll be talking about that a bit later in the interview. But first, I just want to tell you a little bit more about Judith. She was nominated the Best Featured Actress in a Comedy by the Newark Star-Ledger for her performance in Mornings at 7 at the Bickford Theater in New Jersey. She also performs the one-woman play Back Talk, which she has taken to numerous universities and theaters around the country. She appeared with the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey in Chekhov's The Seagull, in Waiting for MacArthur, Mother's Day, and The Women with the Women's Theater Cooperative of New Jersey. Judith has performed in numerous plays in regional theaters, including Alphabetical Order, Hedda Gabler, Bedroom Farce, The Dining Room, 5th of July, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She also records books for the American Foundation for the Blind, as well as commercial publishers. She was nominated for the prestigious Audie Award for her recording of Sea Glass by Anita Shreve. Judith has a BA and MA in education and is a graduate of the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And I recently had the pleasure of presenting side by side or back to back with Judith at a hospice conference in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So I got to see her perform the play Waltzing the Reaper and right before my presentation, and it was a wonderful experience, and we'll talk a bit more about that. And Judith and I met each other through the playwright of Waltzing the Reaper, Paulette McDougall, who is a mutual friend. So, Judith, I'm so glad. I know you're very, very busy, but I'm really glad you were able to take out a little bit of time to come here today and talk with me about Waltzing the Reaper.
Well, it's my pleasure, Karen. I'm happy to do so. I love talking about Waltzing the Reaper.
Well, it's really a phenomenal play. I can't say enough good things about it, and I'm so excited to hear about it from your perspective. And I was hoping first, just for our audience, you'd tell us all a little bit about the play, the premise, and the characters.
Surely. Well, first of all, our mutual friend is Paulette McDougall, and she has written this beautiful play. It's really a very deeply moving and humorous look at the patient and caregiver journey through the dying process. And it's also a last-minute opportunity to mend a broken family relationship between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. There's this woman, Vera, who has led a very full life, and she is now hooked up to six, as she says, gurgling, buzzing, whizzing technical wonders in a hospital. She didn't want to go that way. She told her family, "When my time comes, don't call an ambulance. I don't want to breathe my last breath in a recklessly driven vehicle while overbearing strangers pound on my chest." But unfortunately, they do call the ambulance, and now Vera is attached to all these machines and all these tubes, and all of this in spite of her living will. But we get to hear her. She comes and talks to us, to the audience, and tells us about her life, and tells us about the strange, unpleasant relationship she has with her daughter-in-law. And then we come to the second scene of the play, and I play the daughter-in-law as well. And the daughter-in-law tells you about the relationship with her mother-in-law. But she has a wonderful experience of realizing what it must be like for her mother-in-law to be so attached to these machines when it's not how she wanted to die. in the first place. And the play ends with a very beautiful way of dying. So I hope that helps explain it, Karen.
Yes, and it was really fun to get to see the play and to see the audience's reaction to the play when you and I were presenting together. And I realized it's quite genius the way the play begins, because we see Vera, it's Vera's higher self, really, who comes on stage to talk to us and tell us what's going on. And it's very comfortable for the audience because they're not seeing the ICU, they're not seeing the machines and the tubes, and they're not seeing Vera in a bed. They're seeing Vera walking around on the stage, able to talk to them, and really full of life and vibrant, and describing how miserable it is for her to be in that bed and to be dying that way. But it's comfortable for the audience because it eases them into the subject, I think, of death and dying. They get to see Vera whole and walking around and almost at her best in many ways, talking to us. So the audience doesn't feel that the discomfort that they might if they had to see the scene in the ICU.
No, it's true. I've actually had people come to me after the play and say to me, "This play has helped me realize that I'm not going to be afraid to die," which I thought was quite an interesting response. It just seemed to make it more, help them to realize how they would like to go, and what it would have been like if they were Vera, attached to all these machines. And it seems to be very comforting to the audience. You saw that when we were together in Myrtle Beach. I must say, we also had the best audience. They were wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But the play allows them it puts them in a non-threatening position, pretty much what you're just describing, to be able to watch someone die. But no one's talking at them. They are just there as a willing participant to look at a play, to watch a play and hear what's going on and meet this wonderful character, Vera. I think Paulette McDougall has done a fabulous job creating this character. And you really like her. She's had a good life. She's had a fun life. She would rather not go yet. She said, how does she put it? If it were up to me, I would not expire at this age. I mean, I love life. That is, I did until my wild oats turned into shredded wheat. She'd like to go on for longer, for sure. But she says dying is what happens after living. And she finally got over objecting to that. So she learned to start accepting the fact that this was what was going to happen to her. And it is a very nice, non-threatening way to do it, and yet a very nice way. People have come to me and said, now I know how to speak to someone who's in the hospital and what I need to say. Because I'll say to the audience as the character Vera, I wish my children I wish they would lighten up. You know, either smile and talk and laugh or go home, because I'm still alive. You know, even though I'm hooked up, I'm still here. Let's talk about the good times and the fun times, she says, but they come in here every day with their mortician faces. So she's a happy human being who's had a good, fun life. And now she's come to another stage of life. And she's so well received by the audience. We've never really defined who she is. What did you call her? My higher self?
That's how I interpret it.
Yes, and that's what we do. We leave it to the audience members to interpret how she's out there talking to them when, in fact, she's really hooked up to all these machines. As she says, what is this, astral projection or getting ready to give up the ghost? I couldn't have done this before when I was definitely alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so it seems to be so well received. And first of all, so many, I don't know if you know anyone who's not going to expire, but I don't. So there isn't a person who isn't going to die, right?
Yes.
And So many people, this play is for just everyone. It truly is. But then sometimes I'm also requested to really perform, let's say, in front of nursing students who will be coming up upon people like this. They will be taking care of people like this. What's it like? I'll never forget having a dear friend hooked up to all the machines after a particular terrible brain problem. And I was not a family member, so I had no say. And so I would go and read to her, not the kind of books they do in the play. It was really kind of cute. The daughter-in-law reads all the wrong books to her mother-in-law. But I would read to her, and the nurses would come in and check on everything. And one day a nurse came in and said, "Can you please tell me about Miss Joyce?" And I thought that was so nice. She wanted to know who was this human being who's laying in this bed, who can't talk, read, sing, dance, even look out the window, as Vera says. So, anyway, it's lovely, and I will let you continue with what you have in mind here.
Well, it is lovely, and I think the character Vera, as you described, she's someone that we all immediately like her, and we all relate to her in some ways, and she represents the best of living life well, so kind of an inspiration when she talks about the way she's lived, like, wow, she didn't hold back on anything. She got the most out of every part of life. That's a good thing to do. That makes sense. And and she's really teaching the audience, I think, through her monologue. You know, she's describing what's happening to her, but she's teaching the audience all along how to relate to the idea of dying and how a person comes to accept that idea, and from the patient's perspective, what is needed, from the family, what's needed from the medical system to make this process better. For me, that really stood out.
That's true. You know, and what you just said, to you, that's what stood out. And that's what's so wonderful about using theater, is everyone brings who they are to that auditorium, church hall, wherever it is they're seeing me do the play. They bring who they are to that audience, to that place. And so therefore they take away something very personal to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the idea that you just alluded to is that, maybe it does send some people away thinking, I better live my life because my wild oats might turn into shredded wheat sooner than I want them to. And so let's lead a full life. And I think that would be a lovely sentiment to take away from this play as well. And I'm sure Paulette McDougall would be pleased to know that. Many, many times after the play is performed, I will tell her all the remarks I hear afterwards. And it's just thrilling how people respond. And again, it's so personal. It's to what affects. I've had people come to me and say, 2 weeks ago my mother died, or 2 weeks ago my husband died. And I'll be honest with you, Karen, I am amazed they are even there in the audience. But it comforts them. It seems to comfort them. Now, maybe some people couldn't do that, couldn't come. But to them, they find comfort in it. So it's just a very personal response.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was just going to say it's interesting watching the effect the play had on the audience and how much it really opened their hearts and their minds, so that when I came up, and I came up as more a traditional speaker, just presenting, you know, my ideas about, you know, I mean, I was there to talk about living fully in the face of death. So my subject tied in with with the play that you just presented. But I've never had an audience so well prepared for what I came to talk about. It was amazing. The audience was already right there, fully engaged and with me. There was nothing. I didn't have to overcome any discomfort or nervousness on their part. They were already completely drawn in because of the play. And so it was a great experience to see how well those two modalities work together, the play,
yes.
and then having time afterwards for a little bit of a lecture and a talk from me, but primarily a chance for people to ask questions. That's the other thing that I was really surprised by, is how many people in the audience had compelling questions they wanted to ask
yes.
about death yes. and dying and the end of life.
And share their feelings, yes, and
yes.
share their feelings. And they were
the
so with you, yes.
Yeah,
they were.
But the play got them to that place where they were ready
yes.
for that conversation.
I agree yeah. with you. I think it did, but you certainly had quite a rapt audience because they were there, and they had thoughts and opinions and questions. You didn't have, I mean, when you asked about questions, boy, there were a number of hands. You never
no,
went
I
without
almost,
a question.
I almost asked that too soon in the talk. I hardly had time to
right.
talk about what I planned to talk about. There were
right.
so many questions. But that
oh, but they loved it.
How great the need is, how much people need to talk mm. about the subject. And they just couldn't wait to get to bring up these issues and bring up their questions
yes.
and tell their stories. And it was just
yes.
such a powerful experience. And you and I got to share that together.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like that's, I really believe this, the idea of stories and theater and the arts, it's so evocative, and it really helps break down the barriers and that we put up around ourselves to protect ourselves.
Yes.
And I think it's a perfect way to lead people into these conversations.
I think so, too. I couldn't agree more. It's, as I said, a non-threatening, very comfortable evening of the theater or afternoon of theater, and it is non-threatening, very comfortable, pleasant, and opens minds. It opens minds. And you had people there who were helping one another, too, in your audience, if you recall. This
yes.
one woman whose children just refused to do any talking about this issue, and who she didn't think were even going to be around to help her, and another woman who's saying, well, why don't you try this or why don't you do that? And it was wonderful. It just opened up this incredible group of very involved, very interested. It just generated much more than we could have imagined had it just been separate presentations of,
yes.
you know, okay, here's the play, go home. I always will say to people, and Chris, this is our first time doing this, so that was a great way to do it. But also I will say, when I am hired to do the play, I highly recommend that you create a panel. The play is 45 minutes. Then maybe people can take a break or whatever you choose, and you set up a panel on a stage or however works best, and perhaps you'll have a hospice chaplain and a social worker and a hospice doctor or a hospice nurse or whomever they felt would be appropriate for the audience. And generally I'm doing many, many more for communities because everybody's going to die. You know, so besides doing medical schools and nursing schools and hospice groups, also they're bringing in the community, people from the areas. And it's a great way to do, like if you're not around, to have people respond to the play and then help answer questions like about living wills and advance directives and the five questions or whatever is appropriate in that state where I have just done the play. You're right. People are hungry for this information, and we're seeing it more and more on television, in the newspaper, in magazines. People are talking more about death. I think as the baby boomers move along, you know, they were always a pretty demanding group as it is. So they're going to want to know, okay, what's going to be best for me, and mm-hmm. What do I even want? I have never thought about it before. What kind of music do I want playing if I'm in hospice, or what do I want my children to say or do for me? Or so there's eager. People are eager to learn, and doing a play seems to help relax them and open them to discussion. And mm-hmm. I've seen it work many times.
And this play in particular, because it has humor in it. I mean,
yes.
it's for being about a heavy subject, it's a light play. I mean, and you find yourself laughing, and suddenly you realize, oh, it's not that scary to talk about death and dying. And mm-hmm. because you're laughing and you're being shown the humor and the beauty in this whole subject, and it immediately takes away all the fear and the discomfort and the anxiety that might have been there.
Yes, that's a good point. We don't realize. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was just thinking of other audiences. I've spoken to community audiences where there is almost a palpable feeling of tension in the room before I start talking, and I really spend at least half of my talk is trying to get people comfortable so that they can relax, so that they'll really listen, so that they, and then they will ask their questions and be able to converse about the subject. But the play did it for me. So that was already accomplished before I ever started talking. And
good. Good. I can understand that.
Yeah.
That you must experience that, because we're going to hear it. We're going to talk about death. You know. This incredible fear. Yes. I think about it for myself, because I've been doing this play since 2000, and I don't know, it's just so natural to do it for me. It will be interesting to see my response when my turn comes, what it will be like. But laughter is definitely a part of our day. It's always a part of our day. I have talked to friends who have been with their dying parent, and I mean, people can be laughing right up to the very last minute. The dying person can be laughing. We often think, oh, that's just terrible. You shouldn't do that. No, it's really a part of our lives. If people realize how many times during the day they laugh at the silly things we do, or we laugh at ourselves when we do silly things.
Yes.
It's just all there. And it does, not that we're laughing at death at all, but we are laughing at ourselves responding to death, or knowing that this is something that's inevitable and it is going to happen. And so if it's going to happen, I'm looking like I'm getting on the downward slope. Maybe I ought to do the best I can. And she says, there was so much else I should have given away while I still could, like my wardrobe. There is no sense in being the best dressed in the cemetery. You can't even find a date there. You know, she just, and maybe what it is in particular with Vera is that it's her outlook. She is dying. There's no doubt about it. But the glass is still half full for Vera.
Mm-hmm.
Except she would rather be home doing this dying than hooked up to all these machines with all these tubes in her throat. And as she said, even with all of that, she can still chuckle a little bit on the inside. So interesting.
Very interesting. And one aspect of the play I found very moving was that first we get to hear Vera's perspective, her take on her daughter-in-law and their relationship and how she looks at it. And in the next scene, we get to hear the daughter-in-law's perspective on that same relationship. And it makes it really clear how differently we, you know, each one of us sees things in the world, and we, you know, how two people could be looking at the same thing and see something completely different, and yet these two women actually had so much to share and so much in common. They just completely misunderstood one another, and I found so much redemption in that somehow, that ultimately Elizabeth comes to realize that. I mean, both of them do throughout the play,
yes.
And that's the relationship that heals. And it just gives me so much hope that actually the stress of this dying process and the crisis of someone dying, it's one of those moments when we have an opportunity like that. We have an opportunity to actually change the way we're looking at things, to change our perspective and come closer to another person. We can use it to try to look at how look at life the way that person sees it and understand it. And
yes.
I just thought that was beautifully portrayed.
Yes, it is lovely. And again, Paulette McDougall doing a fabulous job. And I wonder sometimes if, I've never heard a confession of this from an audience member, but I wonder if that doesn't touch someone to make them think, wow, I haven't talked to my brother in 5 years or my father in 5 years or whatever it is. Maybe I should give them a call. Maybe I shouldn't wait until they're dying. Wouldn't it be lovely to be able to have a relationship? And maybe I've missed something. Maybe there's more to this person than I have, or maybe I'm not accepting of. And it would be, wouldn't that be a wonderful outcome of this play? I mean, there's so many wonderful things that mm-hmm. comes from this play, but that to me would be incredibly wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I could see that as a seed that gets planted that may bloom at a later time too, that someone might never forget that because you feel the moment of that transformation in the play, and it sticks with you. You remember the feeling of how amazing it is when Elizabeth finally understands who Vera is and sees it.
Yes. And right in Myrtle Beach, there might have been some testimony to that, because I don't know if I shared with you, but a woman came up to me after the play and said, you performed this play in this same room 2 years ago. She said, and I was in the front row. And when I heard you were coming, I said to the people in my office, who's coming with me? Because she wanted to see it again. And so she brought five of her friends with her. And she said to me, she even said, and you have a new costume. I was just so impressed. So that's kind of nice. I mean, maybe these, and this time she probably saw something else or heard something else or hopefully more, you know, that things even, actually she did come to me afterwards and as well, you know, in hopes to bring the play to her area. But I like that idea, Karen, that even if it's just planting the seed, that, I mean, how lucky can a person get, meaning me, to have someone write a play for you and then be able to perform it and perhaps make people's lives a little bit happier or easier or, I don't want to say better, but, you know, whatever is good for them. That's mm-hmm. incredible.
And
I love that too.
And I will say you perform it extremely well, too. Your portrayal of the two characters it just rings so true. And
thank you.
Really, really well done.
Thank you.
I just want to praise you for that. Not that I'm a theater critic, but I can say, you know, that it was just beautifully presented. Mm. And I wanted to make sure people listening, my goal here is for people to actually hear about this play and decide, we need this play. We need to present this play at our next conference, because I'm thinking of medical conferences I've been to that are just so dry. You hear one clinical presentation after another all day long. To have a play like this in the middle of that day would be so inspiring. It would just completely change the ambiance and the feeling in that room to incorporate this play.
Mm-hmm. It changes the dynamics. I have used mm-hmm. it as the keynote speaker. They've used my play instead. And I have, and oftentimes in these types of conferences, they will ask for a bin. Excuse me, people are required to review their day and what happened, so on and so forth. And I have learned from people in charge that the play is brought up in the breakout sessions and so on, or the various smaller group sessions. They actually can refer to the play, sort of like you did with your talk, mm-hmm. and makes it seem a little bit more real and come alive. So the play does change the dynamic, I think, somewhat, and it's not dreary, as you know. So it is a great way to use it. You're absolutely right. And it has been used that way, and I think to great success.
And you're right, I had no plans to mention the play in my talk. You know, we were scheduled back to back, but I hadn't even considered what I might say about the play during my talk. But the points that I was bringing up were just, there were several times just the perfect illustration from the play, and I could refer back to it, and then I'd see people in the audience shaking their heads, yes, like, I get that because I just saw that. I just saw it on stage, and I get what you're saying about that. And so to have that real example that they've just experienced, it's so valuable to a speaker to be able to engage your audience in that way.
Your audience was well engaged, and I felt that too, actually, from the stage when I was performing the play. These were people. I felt these were mighty. This was a mighty audience. They were lovely. They were so engaged. And then, and we even took a break in between my play and your presentation, and they were still there. They were right there. They were probably even more. Riled. I don't want to say riled up. Sounds more negative. But you know what I mean. Engaged, energized by what just went on. They probably talked about it at the break. Then you came along and you were speaking. And I mean, you could have. They just wanted to be a part of what you were doing. They wanted to be a part of what you were talking about and learn. They were like so very involved with you. And yes, I think definitely that was our first time together. And it worked well doing the play in tandem. It was great. And
it
your
worked
speech.
Really well.
Yeah.
And it did tell me that people, as we said before, are hungry for this information.
Mm.
And they're hungry to receive it in different formats, too, in different ways, to have it presented to them through different modalities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think Waltzing the Reaper has so much value to offer.
Yes, it's different, isn't it? It's very different than being talked at. And perhaps, things that they've heard before. And sometimes I think people tend to tune out when they're being talked at or they're hearing a fairly dry lecture. But with a play, even someone who's thinking, oh, I don't know if I really want to hear a play, you know, all of a sudden they're engaged. They're with you. And that's what I do love. Paulette McDougall, I think, is a genius in that she knows how to write so that people do come along with you. An audience, I'm so impressed how audiences are so willing to accept this character, as you call her, you know, what any of us want. Is she a ghost? Is she an apparition who's talking to us, even though she's actually hooked up to machines? The audience members are so willing to come with me on that, and I always feel like they are half the battle, not the battle, that's the wrong, they're half the energy, they're half the play, really, because I can feel their energy, I can feel their enthusiasm, I can feel their interest, they care about Vera, they care, and that's lovely. They care, and then they begin to care for Elizabeth too. She's them. She's Vera. The audience members, I'm sure, can put themselves in Vera's place, and they can put themselves in Elizabeth's place, and they can put themselves in Vera's children's place, and how in-laws are treated. I mean, there's so much in that play that can touch someone. And wouldn't it be fun? I do get if I ask, I'll get the responses. They'll send me the responses from the conferences, and of course, it's lovely to read all good things. But it's fascinating to see some of the answers people put down as to how it truly affected them. And I'm very grateful that people do that. I mean, sometimes we get those things and you just fill them out quickly, you know, and send it in. But these people really were touched by it. And I guess that's why they wrote what they did or why they were willing to spend some time responding to questionnaires like that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I just
I'm
get
sure
so excited about it, Karen. I go talking too much sometimes.
No, I love hearing about this because I was just thinking that for you as an actress, I'm sure it's even more inspiring to be able to use your passion for acting and through this play, know that you're really making a big difference in the world. You're really helping people, and you're giving them something that they need. That has to be a great feeling.
It's overwhelming. It's an overwhelming feeling. I'm sitting to you in my home in Georgia, and to think that that could really be happening is lovely. You know, to meet this woman who 2 years ago saw the play and said, "I've got to see it again. I want to come back 2 years later." I mean, wow. That is, and people who have seen it this summer, there's this one dear man who has now invited me to all the various lunches of all the various aging groups in Georgia that are at least fairly nearby where I live, and because he just has, he's such love for the play, and he wants it to be seen, and actually that is, if I have a goal, it's, I would like as many people to see this play as possible. And I always feel I can say that because I didn't write it. The dear woman who wrote it, Paulette McDougall, has given me such a vehicle that I am so blessed to have. And she's really made this happen.
It's great because you can promote it wholeheartedly, and you're promoting her work. And that, that has to feel good. But I feel that way about it as well, which is why I wanted to interview you and put it out there for other people to hear, because I'd love for hospices, medical groups, community groups to really consider utilizing this play when they do put together presentations. And if you want to make an impact on your community, if you do something like this, incorporating a play when you're having other speakers come, I think it could make a much greater impact and maybe even draw in more people to the event because of the fact that a play is being presented there. I don't know for sure, but it seems to me that that could happen. And I wanted to just mention, as far as venues, that the room in which you performed it in Myrtle Beach just had a really small, like a riser stage. It doesn't have to be an auditorium. It doesn't have to be so that's not a barrier for a group wanting to bring the play in.
No, that's true. Actually, even if I perform in a ballroom for 200 or 300 people, it's usually risers because ballrooms don't have stages. And so it's a couple of risers and some steps up to it, right? And as far as I need a chair and a very, very tiny table. And it's worked. It's very easy to set up. I bring my own microphone, and so many places now. I just tie into theirs. I've never had a problem, actually. The microphone I have has four different adapters. So I've used two of them so far in my needs since I started with the mic. And if we have theater, well, sometimes we actually use a spotlight type of effect. But actually someone who just hired me to do the play saw it done with the spotlight use. And, of course, it's quite dramatic towards the end, you know, as you can imagine. She said, "Well, what happens if there's no spotlight?" I said, "Oh, it's not a problem." And you saw that happen, Karen, yourself. We were in a well-lit room. We don't need special lighting for this play at all. If I'm in a theater that happens to have it, fun. We use it. But I would say 9 times out of 10, all the lights are up because most of the play is done in the hospital. In the hospital corridor, and then it's done in the hospital chapel, and then at home. So it's basically an all lights up event anyway. So it is really rather easy to mount, easy to do, no doubt about it. And then usually a dressing room of some sort, and that I've learned the term. It's called pipe and drape. They get some, you know, a ballroom, all kind of thing. They have these pipes and the black drapes, and they set it up close to the risers that they've built to make a stage, and that's my dressing room. So it is rather easy to mount.
Yeah, there's no curtain. There's no off area. It's simple, and so there are minimal barriers to any organization that might want to bring the play in. It should be as easy as bringing a speaker in, you know, really.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
If you have a microphone, you know, an audio set up for speakers and a chair,
right.
And you should be able to do it.
Absolutely, yes. Before I had my own mic, I would use like a lavalier, which most places have, or I'm an actor. I can project. You know, I wouldn't probably project to 300, but I might consider projecting to 200, depending. I have made sure in the last few years it's really only in the last couple of years, that I am bringing my own microphone, because when people bring in the community, a number of the people are seniors and may have some hearing difficulties, so we want to make sure everyone can hear. So it just makes it more comfortable for everyone. But it always works out. As I said, I've never had a problem yet. It always works out. I just know that it will work out. I wouldn't be going if it wasn't going to work out. I do believe mm-hmm. this play has a life of its own. It goes to where it's meant to be. And I'd love to see it keep going and keep impressing people and keep hope alive for our future, of what our future is going to be like with death and dying.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with actress Judith Gantley, who currently performs in the one-woman play Waltzing the Reaper by Paulette MacDougall. Judith travels around the country with the play, as you heard her say. And the reason I love this, I had the privilege, as I said in the interview, of working with Judith during a conference. And I love the idea of the play because it's something new and different that we can use in our communities if we want to engage and interest people in the community in talking about death and dying. People enjoy theater. They love to come for a live performance. And it's a humorous, lighter look at end-of-life issues, even though the issues are very serious. As we said, there's a lot of humor in the play. And there's a very low barrier to presenting this play, as we also mentioned in the interview. So if you wanted to bring the play to your community, you can actually present this. You don't need a theater. You don't need a stage, even. You can actually do it with a riser in the front of a room. You don't have to have a curtain. You don't need anything special, just a table and a chair and a microphone. And Judith does the rest. Actually, she brings her own microphone. I guess you need speakers, perhaps, for the audio. So it's something very simple to present. And I think it's an excellent way to engage people. And as you heard us talk about, some of the points I wanted to reemphasize here is, number one, the value of theater, of live theater, when people are seeing a story enacted in front of them and they get completely engaged and involved in that story that's taking place, that the actor is performing for them. It touches the emotions. We can't help ourselves but get emotionally engaged and involved in the story and what's happening. And it opens the heart and the mind to new ideas and new possibilities. And I saw it with my own eyes when I saw Judith perform the play in front of a live audience. And then I stood up to speak to that audience afterwards and answer their questions. And it was incredible. I've never had such an audience so open to talking about death and dying. The second thing is that this particular play, it's the content of the play. It's the fact that the play portrays a dying woman, but in a humorous way. It actually portrays her at her very best, up on the stage in her hospital gown, talking about her life, talking about what it's like to be dying in a hospital and how upset she is that this is her situation. And as we mentioned too, the play shows evolution of that character, evolution also of her daughter-in-law, and healing in their relationship, which is also very profound and presents us with the possibility that the dying process allows for growth and healing of relationships. And so that particular content of the play is also very compelling and inspiring for the audience. And what I found is that it inspired a great deal of questions amongst the audience and much, much discussion in the audience about many different issues. People had questions about relationships, about how to heal relationships with their own children. They also asked me questions about advanced directives, advanced care planning. How do they prevent themselves from becoming the patient in the hospital who's hooked up to machines who doesn't want to be there? And so it was very instructive and really opened the door for these important conversations to take place. Another thing that happened is because the audience had this shared experience of seeing the play on stage side by side together, they had all witnessed and experienced the same thing, it really seemed to bond the audience together. And one of the things we saw within the audience were the conversations that were going on at the break in between the play and my Q&A session with the audience. We saw people chatting and talking with one another. We also saw audience members offering suggestions and help to one another as they were bringing up issues in the audience and talking and asking their questions. Other people in the audience would volunteer, oh, I know something about this. I know an organization. I know a place you could go. And when my session was done, we saw those people come together and share their information and connect. These were people who had been total strangers before the play began. So I just can't emphasize enough the value of live theater, and it's something different. I've been through many screenings of movies before and films and done Q&As with the audience after watching a film together, and that was powerful also in its own way. But I found that while watching a film, audience members were more likely to disengage from time to time and not necessarily follow all the content or be paying attention all the time. During the theater performance, I didn't see any of that at all. I didn't see any of the disengagement at all. The audience was rapt with attention, hanging on every single word, and they were sharing the energy that Judith was putting out as the actor in this role and responding to it and sending her back their own energy. And it was something so powerful. One of the reasons I just wanted to share this, because I'm wondering if there are people out there who belong to an organization that's looking for how do we offer something to our community? How do we engage people? Or maybe you're planning a larger event for your community and you want to involve the arts. And I highly recommend this particular play, Waltzing the Reaper. It lasts about 45 minutes, which is an ideal length because it's easy to pair it with a conversation hour or Q&A session afterwards. And once again, the actress who performs it is Judith Gantley, G-A-N-T-L-Y. And her website is judithgantley.com. You can go there and watch a YouTube video that has excerpts from the play, Judith performing them. You can read testimonials, and you can find out how to contact Judith, because all of the arrangements you can make directly with her. You can email her, let her know if you're interested, and talk about dates and timing and how to set things up. But I just want to reinforce that she's a one-woman show. She brings everything with her. There's almost nothing that you have to do except provide the room. And if you're in a facility that has risers, and that's really helpful if possible, but there's not very much required in order to set this up. So give it some thought, especially if you're putting together a bigger event and you'd like to include some theater in it. Judith is willing to travel anywhere in the country. She's been all over with the play, but she's willing to travel and bring Waltzing the Reaper to your community. So I just wanted to put a shout out there and let you know what's available to you. And I sincerely hope that you are planning a community event, because I think it's one of the ways that we're going to move things forward. We need opportunities for people to engage in conversations about death and dying from many different perspectives and different points of view. And having a larger community event that incorporates the arts opens the door for people to come who may not have been attracted to the conversation any other way. So again, go to judithgantley.com if you want to learn more about her work and about the play Waltzing the Reaper, which is by Paulette McDougall. So I want to thank you again for showing up for the podcast and listening to my presentations here. I really appreciate you for being here. And remember, there's a new episode every Monday. If you like the content that I create, I hope you'll consider leaving a review on iTunes, which helps this podcast be shown to more people who are searching for something to listen to about end-of-life issues. That would be very helpful. If you're interested in doing that, I'd appreciate it very much. Thanks again for all of the support and the love that you send my way. And I'm sending it right back to you. And until the next time we're together, remember to face your fear. Be ready for whatever happens, whatever life brings you from day to day. And love your life. Love every moment of life that you have while you have it. It is precious. I'll see you the next time. Goodbye.